You are about to enjoy a presentation recorded at the 2023 Michigan Conference Camp Meeting held at Cedar Lake, Michigan. We pray that the Lord will bless you as you listen.
Dear God, thank you again for the opportunity to be here, for what you're doing in our lives and in our hearts here at Camp Meeting. We recognize that as we focus on the spiritual aspect of our relationship with you, we recognize that money is an integral part of that. Not because it brings us monetary wealth, but because oftentimes how we deal with it is an indication of our relationship with you. And I pray that you will give us wisdom and how to properly use the wealth and the benefits that you have provided to us, that we may advance your kingdom and in all things bring honor and glory to you. We pray this in Jesus' holy name. Amen. All right, so we're getting started this morning talking about mastering the meaning and methods of money management. And I just want to talk very briefly, again as a reminder. You know, I talked about this the first day, and I mentioned this yesterday as we got started. I just want to read again what David said as he came to the end of his life and as he had gathered the material for the building of the sanctuary. If you remember again that God allowed him to gather all the materials, but it was up to his son Solomon to actually build it. And I was thinking about it when I was walking this morning. If you remember, the children of Israel, originally when they built the sanctuary out in the wilderness, that Moses called, and they brought so much that he had to say, stop. You know, this is too much. Stop bringing it. And when you read what David accumulated for the building of the permanent structure of the tabernacle or the sanctuary, the temple, that there was so much. Some of the stuff, it says, especially in the bronze, when Solomon was building it, that they couldn't even, there was so much they couldn't even account for all of it. They couldn't count it. But this was David's prayer that he said to God. He said, but who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer as generously as this? For all things come from you, and from your hand we have given to you. So again, the idea is, as we're talking about wealth, that everything we have comes from God. Everything that we have comes from God. And if it originated with God, then He has a plan for how we should be using it. And so what we're talking about again this week is, what is God's biblical plan for us to handle that wealth that he's bestowed to us? I want to take a look at a couple of key takeaways, and I apologize, for some reason I couldn't get this to move through the items the way I would like to, so I'm going to just put them all up there. Number one, one of the key takeaways this week, God is a planner and everything we have is from God, so we should expect to have a plan for our money. Fair enough? And that's what we're here to talk about. We started with, we need a plan. One of the very first things, actually the very first item we need to plan, is to return a faithful tithe and a free will offering to God. God cannot bless what we're doing if we do not trust in Him. And the Bible says, don't put your trust in money, put your trust in God. That doesn't mean that money is evil. It doesn't mean that having money is a sin. But it means that ultimately our trust is in God. And when we return to Him our faithful tithe and our free will offering, we are recognizing that our faith and trust is in Him and not in the money. And because of that, He can then bless us even more so than what we were doing before. We talked specifically about debt yesterday. The idea is, debt is not prohibited. The Bible never calls debt a sin, but it should be avoided, including being a guarantor for someone else's debt. And we chatted yesterday about how to get out of debt. And it talks about it. Use a snowball method to pay off debt. So we want to get out of debt. And I talked about a couple of items where it can be appropriate to use debt. If you remember, we spoke about a home mortgage where we have to live somewhere. And if we're not buying a home, we're paying rent, and it's better to be buying the home than to be paying the rent. We talked a little bit about if you live someplace and it's hard to get to work, that having a reliable vehicle is a good way to make sure that you can get a good income that you might not otherwise be able to do. And the last one, used very cautiously and judiciously, could be student loans. But I want to start by telling you, because I've said that there are cases where those, especially with home mortgage, those can work and can work very effectively. Those are last resorts. I'm not here telling people, and I don't want people to leave and say, oh yeah, the presenter, he said you should borrow. on student for student debt. You should borrow on a car. Those are things where if there's no other options, it can be considered. But God's goal is always for us to move to be debt-free as quickly as possible. Is that clear to everyone? All right. So again, debt is not a sin, but God encourages us not to be in that situation. Because if you remember again what we spoke about yesterday, we cannot serve two masters. The Bible says we either serve God or we serve money. The Bible also says that the borrower is a servant to the lender. So in situations where we're borrowing money, we need to remember that money has become the master. Who we're borrowing from is the master, a master to us. And we want God to be our master. So let's move out of situations where we're in debt. The other thing I want to just touch on briefly is we talked a lot about planning yesterday, and someone asked the question, are there any alternatives, where there's no cost to have some kind of budgeting software? So I have a couple of items here up on the screen. I looked this up. We talked about Mint. For those of you that want to have some type of online or budgeting software that you have access to, Mint is probably the most common or the most famous, the most well-known. There's another one called Personal Capital. Actually, looking it up, it's now called Empower. That's another very well-known. That one is probably a little less robust on budgeting and more robust on investments and net worth. So many of these will actually gather data from your different checking, savings, investment accounts. But Personal Capital or Empower is more heavily oriented on the investment side. There is something called Money Manager Budget Planner. And then I think Every Dollar is what Dave Ramsey uses or recommends. And there's a free version of that. So those are items that you would have access to or can find that have no cost. If you're willing to pay some money, Quicken is still available. There's another one, probably one of the most popular outside of Quicken, is You Need a Budget. It's kind of a very specific, focused budgeting software. There's Every Dollar again. There's a paid version of that. And then something called Money Dance, which is actually a lot like Quicken, only it's got much more updated interface. So some people find it a lot easier to use. So these are a couple of options that you have. As I talked about before, when it comes to having a budget and keeping track of it, number one, everyone needs a budget, but everyone's budget's going to be a little different. Number two, everyone needs to keep track of it, but how you keep track of it is going to be individual to you. I talked a little bit about that, even for Sarah and I, how we handle that. This is my wife, Sarah, by the way. I'm not going to make you stand up. She prefers to be quiet and in the background, so I'm not going to embarrass her.
Your beautiful wife,
but
Sarah.
Yes, this is my gorgeous wife, Sarah. And she's so beautiful, both on the outside and the inside. What a wonderful woman. So thank you. But we need to recognize that what works the best for us may not be what works the best for someone else and vice versa. So find a plan, find a program that you can stick with and do it. So any questions on this? It's all pretty clear? All right. Moving on then for today, we're going to talk today's discussion is savings makes sense, but hoarding is a hazard. We want to talk about how to save money, but how to keep it balanced. You know, we talk about the parable of the rich man who said, I've got all this stuff, but my barns aren't big enough. I'm going to tear them down and build more because I'm just accumulating as much as I can. And many of us here have had situations where maybe we've helped a friend or maybe even a relative clean out their house. And how many of you know what it's like to have to clean out from a hoarder, right? Everything that was in there at one time had some value. Would that be fair? The problem was it was no longer valuable because they had so much of it that they were hoarding. So how do we find this balance between saving and keeping it from becoming hoarding? The first thing I would tell you is that saving is a blessing. Benjamin Franklin, not because he said it's a blessing. God believes in saving. A penny saved is a penny earned. There comes a point where we want our money to work for us instead of us having to work for the money. Retirement is one of the biggest reasons to do that. As we get to a place where perhaps we're not able to earn an income, we need that money to take care of us. And we'll talk a little bit about that today and a lot more about it tomorrow. But the point is that we want to have savings as we begin to move out of debt. How can we accumulate funds for good purposes? And one of the first things I would tell you as we're looking at savings, one of the best ways to be able to save money is to not spend it. Is that fair? So we're going to talk about things that we can do where we may not have to spend. But in particular, don't let a tragedy derail your finances. And so there's a form here. I'm going to leave this. Actually, Sarah, if I could give this to you. I'm going to put it over here on the table. It's a life insurance worksheet. One of the things that often can derail families is an unexpected death in a family, particularly a wage earner. And what happens if all of a sudden there's a young family, or maybe not even a young family, you could be older, where there's a death and now there's an inability for that person to bring an income to the family, especially those of us that have kids at home. This becomes really pretty important. No one ever thinks twice about having health insurance. No one really thinks twice about having automotive insurance. But a lot of people say, well, I probably shouldn't have life insurance. It feels like I don't trust God when I do that. I would tell you that there is fairly inexpensive to insure your life compared to insuring your car. And I would hate for us to be in a situation, and it happens, where someone passes away, they die, and families are left in a very dire financial situation. The Bible talks about taking care of the widows and orphans. And as a gentleman, going back years, I've often thought that means that God wants me to take care of potentially my widow and my orphans if something happened to me. So I'm going to leave that, and we're not going to go through this very much, but don't let a tragedy derail your finances. So make sure you have health insurance. Make sure that you've got car insurance, the appropriate level for it. Make sure that those things don't take away and cause you to fall into debt, and now you've got the problem that we were trying to get out of yesterday. So any questions on this? All right, so let's talk a little bit about savings, and let's start with, before we get into savings, what we want to save for and how to do it. Let's start with, when does savings become hoarding? What's that line between this is something that was good and now it's become something negative or bad? And I would tell you that savings becomes hoarding when it's no longer productive. Well, what does that mean? Now, I want us to go to the story of the faithful steward. By the way, we are all familiar with this story of the faithful stewards. Jesus gave the story where the master leaves and gives the 5 talents and the 2 talents and the 1 talents, and we can draw a number of analogies, very good spiritual analogies from that story. I want us to focus on one in particular, and this may be a new one for some of us here. And what I want to do is, before I talk about that, I want to go to the Middle Ages. And if you remember, in the Middle Ages, there was often a lot of wars going on, and you had battles where knights would go out and they would fight. In some cases, it was contained just, we'll call it, in Europe. Sometimes they would go and they would fight the Crusades. But knights would often be called to go and fight, and knights were generally people of wealth. And what they would do is they would leave, and they would leave their properties and stuff in the care of someone, and they would go and they would fight the battles. But what they found is that even though they had told one of their servants, hey, I want you to do this for me, the servant didn't own the assets of the knight. And so they couldn't do certain things because they weren't the owner. And so the alternative was the knight said, okay, well, I'm going to now make you the owner, and I leave and do my stuff. And now you have the ability to do whatever it is they've told you to do. And the knight would go and fight the battles. He'd come back in and he'd say, I'm back in town. I'd like you to now transfer that back to me. And the servant would say, you know, I think I kind of like owning it. I'm just going to keep it. And so the knight had a problem. he had to in some way empower the people that were serving him to do the things that they needed to do financially, but still somehow retain that ownership. And so what happened in the Middle Ages, which actually is based on Roman law, and that becomes really important as we get back to the story of the parable. What they did was they began to identify an asset with a split ownership or a split benefit. You and I, get some writing utensils that are dark enough here. You and I look at ownership through just one single frame, and it contains everything. We are the legal owner, and because of that, we get the benefit, right? So we have, I own a car. I drive it wherever I want. I mean, legally, you know what I'm saying? But if I decide I want to drive to the store today, I don't have to ask anyone's permission. If I want to drive to California for a vacation, I don't have to ask anyone's permission. If I own a checking account and I want to withdraw money to spend it on something that I deem is important, I do that because I'm the owner and so I benefit from that. Is that making sense to everyone? The idea that came out of the Middle Ages as a formal idea, and by the way, we use it today, and this becomes the foundation of American law as it applies to trusts, is the idea that you split this. They said, we're going to have someone that becomes the legal owner in title, but it's not for their benefit. So when these knights would go away, they could entrust someone as the legal owner, but what they did had to be for the benefit of what the knight said. This is what it has to be for. And so today's law, when we talk about trusts and setting it up, someone is named as a trustee for the benefit of the beneficiaries. This person owns it, but never benefits from it. They have to follow the instructions of the grantor, the person that set this up. They have to follow those instructions to benefit others. Does this make sense to everyone? Okay. The reason why this is important is we now go back to the story of the faithful steward. And how does that start? There was a master, and he was going to travel to a faraway land. You see the connection? And so he called the servants and said, I'm going to give you 5 talents, I'm going to give you 2 talents, I'm going to give you 1 talent. And so this concept that of having legal ownership, having a benefit that's separated, goes back to Roman law. So the people in Christ's time would understand what Jesus was talking about. And I mention that because there's multiple requirements here. This legal owner, I would tell you today, since 1920, a gentleman named something, Mr. Scott, wrote a series of books called Scott on Trusts. It's basically the foundation of all trust law. And out in that, he outlines that there are a number of duties of a trustee or a fiduciary. And by the way, a duty of a fiduciary is considered to be the highest duty known to man, that we would be entrusted with something for the benefit of someone else. So there's multiple duties that are in there. One, a duty of loyalty, that if the grantor says this is what I want, that you're loyal to those instructions, a duty to account for it, a duty to preserve. But one of the duties, and this is what I want to talk about, a specific duty by law today that goes all the way back to Roman times, is there's a duty to be productive. In other words, if you have been entrusted as a legal owner to benefit someone else, you can't just sit on it. You actually have to make it productive. And so when we put it in that context, now it doesn't seem as a surprise that the master comes back and goes to the guy and says, hey, I gave you 5, what'd you do? Well, I did this and that, and now I have 10 that I'm giving back to you. Well done, good and faithful servant. He went to the servant that had 2, and he said, I gave you 2, what happened? Well, I did this and that, and now there's 4. Well done, good and faithful servant. And then he went to the servant that had 1 and he said, what? I didn't do anything. I did not make it productive. And a lot of times we look at that and say, well, why was the master so upset? Because he didn't lose it. You know, these other guys, they did some things. What if they had lost it? Because even back in Roman times, the idea was in that situation, there was an understanding that you had an obligation, a duty to make it productive, to do something with it. And that's why the master said you could have at least brought it to the money lenders and gotten some interest. You should have at least done that. So we need to look at the idea of savings through the concept, kind of the paradigm. When we're saving, we need to make it productive. And when it stops being productive, we're now hoarding. All right? So let's jump in here. Let's start with this. How much should I have in savings? 6 months. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Number one, let's identify what savings are. For the concept of what we're talking about, from the perspective of this seminar, let's define savings. Savings, in this case, are going to be defined as money in a risk-free bank deposit type of account. All right? I'm not talking about the stock market. I'm not talking about real estate. I'm talking specifically about a cash equivalent where hopefully we're getting some interest or earnings on it. But it's basically safe money. How much should we have in safe money? And I've heard a couple people, what was the answer? 6 months? Okay, anyone else have? The answer to the question, how much should you have? Someone says 3 to 6 months. Anyone else? All right, here's where I think all of us need to start. And I mentioned this before. Number one, if you don't have any savings, start with a $1,000 emergency fund. Now, a lot of people here are going to say, that, well, that's not enough. You're exactly right. It's not enough. But $1,000 in an emergency savings account is more than zero. And we have to start somewhere. So as we're going through the process of getting our finances in order, start with an initial emergency fund of $1,000. That's one of the first things we need to do. I would say in some ways before we go through the process of paying down debt, because if we don't have some type of emergency savings fund, when emergency comes up, we're back in debt. So at a minimum, start with that $1,000. Eventually, what we want to do is we want to grow that to a long-term emergency expense fund, 3 to 6 months. Now, someone would say, well, should it be 3 or should it be 6? It depends a little bit. If you have very little to no debt, and if you're probably in a higher income bracket, you're likely looking at closer to the 3 months. If you're in a lower income bracket, if you have quite a bit of debt, you're probably looking at more of the 6 months. But I also want to remind us that when we're looking at it, because that can look like a lot, like, man alive, how am I going to save half of my income every year? What we're talking about here is 3 to 6 months of expenses. So number one, this is money that we're saving. We've already paid our tithe and offering on this money. So should we need to draw from it? Our tithe and offering for those funds has already been taken care of. Not necessarily their interest or the earnings, but the principal. So we don't need to be accounting specifically for the faithful return of a tithe. Number two, this is money that we've already earned, and so we don't have to pay taxes on it. We don't have to, you know, the 7.65% for our FICA and Social Security. This is money that we've already earned, so whatever your tax bracket is, we don't have to worry about the 4.25% state. Although, by the way, are you guys familiar that this year we don't have to pay here in the state of Michigan 4.25%? It's 4.05% because when there's a surplus, this is just extra. I'm not even going to charge for this today. This is but there was a discussion on sending out refund. The question was, didn't that get, what was your comment? Didn't that issue get squashed? My understanding, and I'll double check just to make sure. My understanding is that they squashed the idea of sending out refund checks in April or May, but that by law, the actual tax revenue has to drop to offset the surplus, and so it automatically drops to 4.05. But I will double check that just in case.
Well, the story I heard was they were going to spend the money so there wouldn't be a surplus.
Okay. The comment was they're going to spend the money so there won't be surplus. That's not a story. That's just the fact of how politicians work. So we don't need a news article to tell us that. But I will double check, because my understanding is that it did drop because of that. But I will double, triple check that. Either way, the point is that there's state income tax. You don't have to worry about that if you're pulling your savings. So your federal tax, your state tax, your FICA, Social Security, your tithe and offerings. So what you're really looking at is just the things that you would spend on. And that becomes a lot easier. In some cases, you're looking at maybe a third, you know, somewhere between 30 and 40% is out of the way. You don't have to worry about that. So looking at 3 to 6 months of expenses. That's where you need to get to. In addition to that, a couple of other things that we should have in savings is money for known future expenses. There are things that come up that we should be prepared to pay so that we're not scrambling at the next at the last minute or the next time these things are due. And a couple of those would be, I like to consider them periodic annual expenses. One of the things that I do is I like to pay my auto insurance every 6 months. I get a discount for that. That's free money to me. And it becomes very easy if every month I'm setting aside what do I need in savings so that when the 6 months is there, I have that full amount, automatically gets paid. I pocket the savings, goes back into another savings account. And then each month I'm putting, you know, 1/6 or 1 month's worth of the next 6 months. So if you have periodic expenses, I recommend that you begin saving for those. For some of us here, you might also be paying, if you don't have a mortgage, you're paying your property taxes out of pocket. Have those saved. No one wants to come to a, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 tax bill all of a sudden. So be saving for those. In addition to homeowners insurance would be the same thing. You don't want to have to just come up with that at the end of the time period. For those of you that are at the other end of the spectrum where you don't own the home free and clear, savings for a down payment on a home. And I would encourage you, the larger your down payment is, the less expensive the home will be, because I still think there's something called, maybe it's not called PMI, but it used to be if you didn't have a certain amount of down payment, you paid this extra insurance premium. And I'm pretty sure it's still out there. Less than 20%? Okay, all right. So it hasn't changed since the last time I looked. Save so that you don't have to pay that. So even though you could get in some cases a mortgage for 3% down payment, it's better to have a larger down payment. So save for that. We had a question.
Bill, you can get rid of the PMI if your home value, if they go ahead and do an appraisal and find out that you have more than 80% or more than 20% equity.
Yes, the statement was that can go away either through an appraisal or after you've, another one would be after you've made enough payments so that the value of your loan is now less than 80% of the current value. You're exactly right. It's still better, I think, as much as possible to avoid as much as you can, but it's not irrevocable. You even if you get into that, you can get out of that as you the home appreciates or as you pay down the debt. But that's another good reason to have savings would be a down payment for a home. Education costs. Most people, when it comes to Christian education or any type of college education, it's difficult to just write a check. Anyone that's been in that situation would probably agree those can be some pretty big costs. So you would want to start saving for education costs for kids or grandkids. And this kind of straddles savings versus investing. So for some people, if they're starting early enough, we'll talk tomorrow about investing, which is more of a long-term strategy. But at least initially, a good place to start is in a savings type of an account.
Some boarding academies knock off 3% of the bill if you pay the whole school unit off.
Yes, the comment was some boarding academies will knock off 3%. Some might, I think I've heard as much as 5%. But there can be a reduced amount if you pay in full. So why not save in advance? And now again, you have 3, maybe 5% in savings because you paid it up front. So if we're diligent on the front end, we can often reap the rewards on the backside. And that's the value of savings. And then one of the other items, and we're going to talk about this really tomorrow, we need to be saving for retirement. Now, in the concept of risk-free bank deposit type of accounts, I would not categorize a retirement account. We're not going to get very far if we're intending to live, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about this tomorrow. I'll try to remember. Life expectancy at age 65 gets somewhere between 25 and 30 years, depending on whether you're a male or female. So if you're planning to retire at age 65, that's 25 or 30 years that you need to live. And generally, Social Security is not enough. So we need to be thinking today about setting money aside. It will end up being a conversation tomorrow on investing, because we want that money to work as much as possible for us. And getting 0.05% in a savings account probably isn't going to do it. But the idea is, set money aside for retirement, even though it doesn't end up in a savings account. Any questions or comments on this? Let's just take a minute. Does anyone else have something else that you would think this could be really important to set money aside and have savings as well? Michigan says 4.05? Okay, so for those of you listening here, we just got a confirmation that Michigan.gov has stated that state income tax for Michigan in 2023 is now 4.05 as compared to the 4.25. Hey, guess what? For those of you that are setting money aside in taxes through your paycheck, you're not really doing it consciously, they're pulling the money. When you do your taxes at the end of the year, likely you're going to have a refund or you will owe less. Guess what you can do with that money? You can save it, because that's the very next thing we're going to go to, how to save money. Everyone here in the room will have extra money in January, February of next year because of this.
Something that I learned many years ago is when we had extra money and we were at that time, you know, buying a home.
Yeah.
We paid double payments, and that cut off several years and money, and we cut off a 20 year long to down to 10, you know, and when you figure what you would have paid out.
Right. Yeah, the comment was one of the other ways to save money is to pay off debt quicker, particularly a mortgage, by doing a double payment. And a number of years can be taken off of your mortgage payment because you do double payments. That's another way to do a snowball. Another way of doing that is many people are paid every 2 weeks, and you can pay your mortgage every 2 weeks, or maybe it's half every 2 weeks, which would be the equivalent of one payment a month, except you would end up with 13 payments during the year instead of 12, because there's 26 pay periods if you do it every 2 weeks. And that would mean that twice during the year, you would make that half payment. So it's equivalent of one more full payment. We have another question here.
When I sold real estate and dealing with people buying homes, what we would tell them is, you know, there's some months, 2 months out of the year, there's 5 weeks, so you'll get an extra paycheck with that whole thing toward your rent, and you'll cut 7 years off your mortgage just by that one twice a year.
Okay, so the comment was, if you apply basically one extra payment twice a year, you will, and it goes directly to principal, you will pay off your mortgage in 7 years sooner. And I'm assuming that would be on a 30-year mortgage. Yeah. Wow, that's powerful. You've just now reduced your time period by 25%. And that's significant. So there's little things like this that can really add up. But how to save money? How specifically can we have money in savings? And I would tell you, this, all these things that you're talking about are right in line. I should give you guys, give you each a 20, because you've prepared the class for these next items. The number one way to save money is to say goodbye to debt. Eliminate debt. When you eliminate debt, you are no longer spending your money on debt, and you now have the ability to save that money. So these little things where you do a couple extra payments a year can make a big difference, or a double payment every month. Did you have another question or comment?
Yes, a suggestion.
Suggestion, okay.
When my first husband was working for the telephone company, and he got quite a bit of overtime, he didn't need the overtime, so he committed to invest all the overtime and then let it buy company stock and recompound and do that over 50 years.
Right. Right. The comment that was made was a spouse took all the overtime income over a number of years and just simply invested that rather than spending it. And it became a sizable amount, doesn't it?
Over a period of
years, it can absolutely add up. So the question is, for many of us who may not, that's a wonderful example, by the way, and thank you for sharing that.
He was able to retire at 59.
And he was able to retire at age 59. Okay.
59, was owed absolutely nothing, had enough money to be able to travel on the investments plus.
Right. Yeah, we're again, for those listening here, the incredible benefits for someone who had done something like this, age 59, to be able to retire, travel, enjoy a lifestyle. Absolutely. So number one, say goodbye to debt. Number two, for those of us that may not be in a situation where we have an extra source of income becomes a very easy way to say, I don't need this, I'm going to set it all aside into savings. But what happens if we don't have an extra source of income? And I talked about before, yesterday, if you remember, that debt at its core is not an income issue. Debt at its core is what? It's an expense issue. We're simply spending more than what we're making. Now, what we want to do is we want to bring our expenses back in line with what we're actually earning, and then it's a net income in terms of, you know, certain money comes in, but we're not spending any extra, but that money is going out. What we now need to do is go one step further and reduce those expenses so that there's a gap between what we earn and what we're spending, and there's a net positive difference. So we need to take a look at how do we cut down expenses. And what are some ways that we can cut down expenses? Anyone have an idea of what the most overspent item is in our budget? Groceries. Groceries are the number one way to cut down expenses. And I'm guilty of this too. You know, you go to the store and you're walking through the store and you have to get a couple things, but boy, those Cheez-Its are on sale, all right? So I got to admit, that's kind of a joke. When my kids were little, I used to do quite a bit of the shopping, and so I'd go to the store, and you know, you're making lunches for the kids, and I didn't have really great lunches growing up. I was like, well, I'm going to get them some snacks. And, hey, Cheez-Its are on sale. And for 10 years, Cheez-Its were on sale every single week. I actually took a picture early this year, and I sent it to my kids because for the first time in my known life, the Cheez-Its at Meijer's were not on sale. So, groceries is a great place to cut down on expenses. Part of that, buy generic. A lot of times, boy, we need the name brand. The reality is we can probably do with something a little less. And this goes to not just food or groceries. You know, a lot of times, at least when I was a kid growing up, you had to have the name brand clothes. You know, that's a big deal. And I understand for kids, you know, image has some value or importance. But so often we can get what we need without looking silly, and we don't have to pay the full price for the name brand. And so what we need to do is we need to look for, and this goes to a lot of things. There are even tires on your car. There can be a huge difference in the cost of tires on a car versus a well-known brand and an equivalent, you know, the same amount of guaranteed miles, the same quality that goes into it, the same type of traction and all that for a far lower cost. So I encourage us to take a look at what are we getting for the value that we're spending. In economics, and I use this concept, I actually have a favorite word. I call it utiles or utility. It's an economic concept that says, what do you get for what you've spent? And if I can get 2 units of benefit for a dollar spent, isn't that better than just 1 unit of benefit for a dollar spent? And so I want to encourage us when we're thinking about what we're spending, what benefit are we getting for each dollar that we're spending? And can we get a bigger benefit by spending the same amount? or can we get the same benefit for spending a less amount? And that's how we start saving money. So look at groceries, look at buying generic, reduce energy costs. Energy can be a significant part of our expenses, especially here in Michigan, because we have cooling in the summer and we have heating in the winter. It's incredible. I don't have the numbers with me today. If you change just a degree or two of temperature in your house, a little bit colder in the winter, a little bit warmer in the summer, it's amazing how much lower you can lower your expense bills when you do that. So take a look at reducing your energy costs. Review your mobile phone costs. Not all of us need the fastest service unlimited. A lot of the technology that we have today allows people to stream and game around the clock. I'm hoping that most of us aren't needing to game 20 to 24 hours a day. Because of that, we may not need the fastest service. We may not need the most expensive plans. And in the old days, this wasn't a big deal. But today, it's easy to start racking up expenses on our mobile phones. And so take a look at what plan you have and see if you can get that reduced. Another thing, in addition to cutting down expenses, cancel unneeded subscriptions and memberships. How many of you here have ever been offered, hey, sign up today, it's 30 days for free, try it out. And so you sign up, not realizing, or maybe you realize that there's an expense and you don't get it for 30 days free, and then they come back and say, hey, did you like that? Yeah, I really like that. Great. Are you willing to sign up now? I don't know. It doesn't work that way. You sign up in the beginning, and now it's your responsibility to cancel it. I would encourage everyone here, go back and look on your credit cards, because usually that's how they're charging. Do you have subscriptions that you're not actually using? Actually, that's a good reminder. We should all be reconciling our bank accounts and our credit cards every month. You want to know what's being charged. It is not uncommon for there to be charges there. I'm not saying this is going to happen to everyone all the time, but periodically there's charges and they are not yours. I looked at mine once and I was like, why do I have a $950 charge to Detroit Edison Electric Company when I live in Grand Haven? I made a phone call and they said, yep, there's something not right about that. So we canceled the card, got a new one. Somehow that charge was there. Well, guess how I knew it was there? Because I looked. There's other stories I've had three or four times where something like that has happened. We need to look at that. We had a question here and in the back, I think. So I'll start with you.
So normally when I try something, let's say for 30 days, I will put it on my calendar on day 29, cancel subscription. I have the phone number written down and the email, whatever, so that I cancel it before the day that it's due. And that way, that's how I get out.
Yeah. Yeah. The comment was, it's actually... Yeah, the comment was if there's an initial subscription that it's actually on the calendar before that 30 days is up so that you know to cancel it. Because yeah, most of us, we think I'm going to remember, but we don't. The reality is we get caught up with other things. So we had a question in the back. Yeah.
Anyone that uses Amazon, I'm sure everybody does. They got busted a month ago for signing people up for free 30-day trials of HBO and Showtime and then not canceling it. And people never signed up for it. It was just a free offer they gave you. But it was up to you to cancel.
Wow. Okay. The comment was that Amazon got caught setting people up with subscriptions that the people had not signed up for, and it was a free 30-day trial for HBO or maybe another streaming service, and they signed them up without telling people, and at the end of the 30 days, then they started charging them for it. Yeah, a little scary. Yeah, that's exactly why we want to look for those kinds of things and make sure we're canceling them. Did we have another question in the back?
So when you're paying down debt, do you still save? Like, what do you do when you're paying down debt?
Oh, yeah. Great, great question. The question was, do you save while you're paying down debt? Number one, this kind of stuff we should be doing from the beginning, because whether it goes into savings or goes into money that we use to pay down debt, either way, we need this extra money. Number one, you should be saving for that initial, the very first thing that anyone should do is get that $1,000 savings emergency. Number two, then you begin to pay down the debt, especially those high credit card, if that's what it is. I will come back tomorrow and I'll actually try to have, here's exactly what that order is, because it begins to kind of come together. But I will also tell you that if you have a retirement plan at work that matches from the beginning, at a minimum, you should be saving enough to get the full match. That's just free money. Do not miss out on that. Most of us will need to save more than what they're matching. And eventually we can talk about, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, you know, when do you start adding or doing more if you've got some of these other items to take care of. But I'll try to have the order for you. The savings for that $1,000 initially, that's number one. And then paying off some of those larger bills. So good question. Another question here. The question is, what's the best way to save for retirement if you're self-employed? If you are self-employed, number one, everyone has eligibility to IRAs. And so you can do that. But you should also be able to get a maybe like a simple IRA as a self-employed person that has higher limits. And you can do an IRA anywhere. You can do it at a brokerage firm. You can do an online account. You can do it at a bank. There's a number of different places. An IRA or even a simple IRA, that's really just the legal framework that allows you to set money aside and not have to pay taxes until you take it out for retirement. So there's a number of different places. And if you and I want to chat afterwards, I can maybe give you a couple ideas for how to do that. But as a self-employed person, you still have access. What you don't have is an employer other than yourself that will add money to it on your behalf. If you're self-employed, any money that goes in is going to be yours. So that's the one thing you miss is, you know, that 50 cents on the dollar match up to 5 or 6% that some of the other people here might be eligible for. You got a question?
Just a quick comment. Yesterday you made a statement that I thought was great. You said your mom told you that the big print giveth, the small print taketh away. My son purchased a few $1,000 sofa and they had so many months, maybe 24 months to pay it. And it was interest free. And he was a day late. And the interest rate that they had then piled on back to day zero.
Yes.
At a seemingly usurious rate.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was in the small print.
Yeah, the comment here for those listening is that the big print giveth and the small print taketh away. And there was a situation where someone borrowed or took a loan or borrowed or bought something on credit for free interest for a period of time. And they missed the payment at the end by one day and the interest went back to day one. And I'm going to guess that the interest was probably somewhere between 18 and 24%. That's my guess.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, yeah, it's awful. Those are the kinds of things you have to pay that. But they get you caught. They get you caught because you've forgotten. They want you to forget that you owe the money.
I think it's a postage. It was a payment.
Yeah, they want you to forget so that you have to pay that kind of interest. Anyway, so let's keep moving on because we're getting close to the end here. Cancel unneeded subscriptions and memberships. DIY, do it yourself. This is a big fad out there. You know, hang your own doors, fix your own walls, do stuff like that. But I'm going to tell you, in addition to what we might do around the house or do with our vehicles, DIY includes meals. All right.
Yes,
it is expensive today to go out to eat. And one of the things I've noticed is a lot of restaurants, going back to what we talked about, I can't remember if this was on Monday or yesterday. We talked about the idea that for some people who are incredibly disciplined, rather than spend cash, they will use their credit card, pay it all off at the end, and then get points. Well, there are some restaurants now that are charging 3% on top of the meal for you to use your credit card. All right, so meals are expensive. Some car repair places will do that as well. I actually just had my lawnmower serviced for the beginning of the season. And the guy called me and said, Jim, you know, you can take care of this right over the phone, but you've been with me for a while. I'm just going to tell you right now, if you do it with a credit card, I have to charge you an extra 3%. If you want to come in the next day or two and write out a check, you don't have to pay the 3%. Anyone want to guess which way I chose? Okay. Now, here's the other question. It wasn't that far. It wasn't that far. Here's the other question. Based on everything you know about me in the last 3 days, what do you think I did with the 3%? I saved it. Exactly. All right, next question. Yeah, the comment was sometimes there's added fees even for the Secretary of State here in Michigan that we processing fees. We need to be aware of that. So look for how to do it the least expensive way.
Right.
Yeah, the comment is that if you buy a home and you do some things to fix it up, but you're living in it as a primary residence and you stay there at least 2 years, when you sell, you are not taxed on the gain. That is correct. And that's true for pretty much all of us in our home. If we were to go and we were to sell our home today and move into something else, we have no capital gains need to be reported to the government. I think there's an exclusion if single up to $250,000 of gains, married up to $500,000 of gains that you're excluded from. We had one other question here, and then I want to just wrap up and we'll have some general questions.
For those of us who return tithe online, if you use your credit card, you get, I believe, it's 3% charge. Mm-hmm. And if you use your bank account, you don't get. So FYI.
Yes. So the comment was there is a charge if we give our tithe and offering online. I'm not sure if the church is charged. So, yeah, keep in mind. Okay. Yeah, there's a little bit of conversation here, but the bottom line is there is a 3% cost for us doing our gifts online. I'm sorry. Thank you. Just with a card. If you go directly, you're right. If you go directly through the bank account, there is no cost, but if you put it on the credit card, there is a 3% charge. And my understanding, having looked at that, and I think you can confirm here, the charge isn't to us. We're not paying an additional 3, but only 97% of what we're giving actually ends up in the hands of the churches, whether it's the conference or the union or the general conference. So yes, there is a cost. Someone is paying that cost. Go ahead, Mike. Okay. So the clarification is the full amount. Yes, the full amount gets there to the church, but your billed. So there. Yeah. So the net impact to the conference, it would still be fair to say the net impact to you guys is the 97%. Yeah. No. No, you don't pay extra. Well, it's still to the benefit of the church to have gone through the bank account because they are able to use the full 100%. The credit card is charging the church at some point, and so that's why that 3% gets used. So instead of using it for camp meeting or using it for ministerial or use whatever, they're using it to pay a credit card fee.
So if you give $100 to combine budget to your local church will get $100, but the conference is going to pay $3 to the. So it's coming out of conference funds, but your local church is going to get all that's coming to them. But the conference, am I right, Mike? Yep. They're going to pay that extra fee. So your local church gets the full thing. The conference takes the hit.
Might as well just use your bank account.
Yes. Yeah. The comment is let's just use the bank account because then there's no cost. Certainly not to any of us, as there would be on the other side, but definitely now not to the conference. So good item. So again, DIY, wherever possible, do things on your own. YouTube is incredible. There are very few things that any of us would ever have to do that there isn't a YouTube video that tells us how to do it. All right? Except for surgery. Yeah, I'm not going to take my appendix out. that's a good point. All right. So within reason, DIY, and that includes meals. So with all this in mind, we've got about three minutes left. Any other questions as we talk about savings? Yes. Yeah. Good question. The question had to was based around there's an encouragement often to bundle your home and your auto insurance together because the two together are a lower cost, but it seems like every few months those costs are going up. The reason that the costs are going up is likely that it's not likely that they're taking those discounts away. Usually the reason those costs are going up is because either their experience in paying claims has gotten more expensive, but really what it's boiled down to primarily here in the last year or so is inflation. Inflation last year was at one point at 9.1%. So that means that if you paid $100 for something the year before, at that point, it was probably $109. So insurance is just one of those things where the costs have gone up for us to pay insurance because the cost of insuring things, the cost of repairs, all that kind of stuff have gone up. And I would tell you, particularly with autos, the used car market is the most expensive that it's, I wouldn't go so far as to say as expensive as it's ever been. It is more expensive than I've seen in a long time. For a while, because of the supply chain issues that we were having through COVID, a lot of it was impacting technology. And so automobile manufacturers couldn't install these little chips where they needed to. I'm trying to remember, there's like in some cars, there's, I think I'm remembering right, maybe a couple hundred, at least dozens, but there could be tons of these, you know, chips that, that measure and monitor and all this kind of stuff. Well, if they're not getting the chips, they can't, they can build the vehicles, all the metal is there, but they can't put the electronics in. So they can't sell the car. So if you can't buy the new car, the next best thing is, well, I got to buy a used car. Sometimes cars that were a year or two old were as expensive as a brand new one. And if you have a car now where your used car is 2 years old, but it's almost as expensive as a new car, you get it in an accident, it's pretty expensive to replace. So car costs have gone up, and that's probably one of the main reasons. And the other thing is, if your house burns down, there was a time where lumber was 2 to 3 times what it used to be. So that's probably what's driving the cost more than them taking the discounts away. If you looked at it, chances are that if you unbundled them, it would be still much more expensive than putting them together. That does bring up a good item, though. Check with your insurance agent, because a lot of times there's discounts that you might be eligible for that you're just not aware of. I had one when the kids were on. If you remember, we had 7 of us on our auto policy at one time, and I could have bought a second home, literally, for what we were paying in auto insurance each year. But if they had good grades in school, we got a discount. So there's all kinds of things that we can get discounts for if we ask, and we just need to learn to ask. The point was, when you reach a certain age, many of us could be eligible for reduced cost of insurance, either at age 50 or 55 or something like that. It's not offered to us automatically, but if we ask, we can probably get it. So ask questions. Unless you're running into things, yeah. You're that old. Oh, yeah, okay, let's not go there. Let's not go there. Yeah, the question is, should you always keep full coverage on your vehicle, even if it's paid off? It depends, this is me personally, I think it depends on the value of the car. If you're driving a beater, I would say no. There's no point in it, because within a year or two, you'll have paid as much as insurance as what it would cost to replace it with a deductible. If it's a really nice vehicle, then it would make more sense. So in between that, you know, it's really up to you, but I would say as vehicles age, and I always like to get the last mile out of a car, and as they get closer to that age where, you know, they're not gonna go much further, I'm not fully insuring for every single issue that happens. Yeah, I don't, that's me personally, but I don't recommend that we would need to have full coverage on a vehicle that's on its last legs, or even a little bit before that. We're 10:32. If there's maybe one other question, otherwise I want to get you guys out to your next meeting. The question was tomorrow if we're going to go over how to invest savings. Tomorrow, yes, we're going to talk specifically about the concept of investing. What I'm not going to do is tell you guys, here's an investment you need to be in. Is that fair? Because everyone has different scenarios, but I'm going to talk about the principles of investing and how to approach investing to make it so it's a worthwhile. In fact, tomorrow's topic is called Investing Isn't Gambling and Gambling Isn't Investing. How to make our money work for us so that we don't have to work for the money. So we'll be covering a lot of very specifics on investing, how to look at it, and some practical things on how to invest properly. All right, I'm going to close with prayer. If you guys have any questions, feel free to step up, and I'd be happy to answer those afterwards as well. Dear God, we thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today to learn a little bit more. Lord, help us to recognize that it's not just being productive. I wish I had spent a little more time on this. It's not just productive in terms of savings and what we could get for it and how we would use it. But Lord, help us to look at our money for how it can be productive for your kingdom. That's really what this is about, that we can get our finances in line so that we now can return to you what you need to move forward your kingdom here on earth and hasten the soon coming of Jesus. We pray that today, ask that you be with us now as we leave. We ask this all in Jesus' precious name. Amen.
To listen to more of these presentations, you may visit the audio archives at MISDA.org/audio2023 or search for Michigan Conference Camp Meeting wherever you get your podcast.